Chapter 37. A Note from the Palace. The day after the Festival of Birds dawned to strong winds off the Sea of Storms that actually cut the heat in Ebu Dar. A sky without a cloud, and the red-gold dome of the sun on the horizon, gave promises for once the wind died, though. Matt hurried down through the Tarasin Palace with his green coat undone and his shirt only half-laced in anticipation. He did not quite jump at every sound, but he did give a start, considerably more wide-eyed than he liked, whenever one of the serving women passed, swishing her petticoats and smiling at him. Every last one of them smiled, in a particularly knowing way. It was all he could do not to run. At the last, he slowed, easing onto the shaded walk bordering the stable-yard almost on tiptoe. Between the fluted columns of the walk, yellowish reedy plants in big red pottery bowls and vines with wide red-striped leaves dangling from metal baskets on chains formed a thin screen. Unconsciously, he tugged his hat lower to obscure his face. His hands ran along his spear, an ashandarai, Brigitte called it, unthinkingly fingering the haft as if he might need to defend himself. The dice tumbled inside his head fiercely, yet that had nothing to do with his uneasiness. The source of that was Tylan. 6 closed coaches with the green anchor and sword of House Mitzubar lacquered in the doors already waited in line before the tall arched outer gates with teams hitched and liveried drivers mounted. He could see Nalisian yawning in a yellow-striped coat on the far side of them, and Vannin sat slumped atop an upended barrel not far from the stable doors, apparently asleep. Most of the other red arms were squatting patiently on the stable-yard flagstones, a few tossed dice in the shadow of the huge white stables. Elaine stood between Matt and the coaches, just the other side of the screen of plants. Rihanna Corley was with her, and close by, 7 more of the women who were at that peculiar meeting he had burst into the evening before. Rihanna was the only one not wearing the red belt of a wise woman. He had half expected them not to appear this morning. They had the features of women used to ordering their own lives and others, and most had at least a bit of gray in their hair. Yet they watched fresh-faced Elaine with an air of expectation, seemingly on their toes, as though ready to jump at her command. The whole lot caught less than half his attention, though. None of them was the woman who had him ready to jump out of his skin. Tylan made him feel, well, helpless was the only word that seemed to fit, however ridiculous it seemed.
"We do not need them, Mistress Corley," Elaine said.
The daughter heir sounded like a woman patting a child on the head.
"I've told them to remain here until we return. We will attract less attention, especially across the river, without anyone recognizably Aes Sedai."
Her notion of what to wear visiting the roughest part of the city without attracting attention was a wide green hat with green-dyed plumes, a light dust cloak of green linen worked in golden scrolls hanging down her back, and a high-necked green silk riding dress with gold embroidery climbing the divided skirts and thickly emphasizing the oval that exposed half her bosom. She even wore one of those necklaces for a marriage knife. That broad band of woven gold would make every thief's hand in the Rahad itch. She carried no weapon beyond a small belt knife. But as to that, what weapon did a woman who could channel need? Of course, every one of those red belts had a curved dagger tucked beneath it. So did Rihanna's belt of plain-worked leather. Rihanna removed a large blue straw hat, frowned at it, then put it back on and retied the ribbons. Elaine's tone did not seem to be what was bothering her. She put on a diffident smile with the hat and a timid tone.
"But why does Mera Lilla Sedai think we are lying, Elaine Sedai?"
"They all do," one of the red belts said breathlessly.
All of them wore Ebu Dari dresses in sober colors with narrow plunging necklines and skirts sewn up on one side to expose layered petticoats, but only this one, bone-lean and with more white than black in her long hair, had the olive skin and dark eyes of an Ebu Dari.
"Saritha Sedai called me liar to my face about our numbers, about—"
She cut off short at a frown and a "be quiet, Tamarla" from Rihanna. Mistress Corley might be ready to curtsy and simper for a child if the child was Aes Sedai, but she kept a tight rein on her companions.
Matt frowned up at the windows overlooking the stable yard, those he could see from where he stood. Elaborate white wrought iron screens covered some, white wooden screens of intricately carved piercework others. Not likely Tylan was up there. Not likely she would appear in the stable yard. He had been very careful not to wake her getting dressed. Besides, she would not try anything here. At least, he did not think she would. Then again, was anything past the woman who had had a half a dozen serving women seize him in the halls last night and drag him into her apartments? The bloody woman treated him like a toy. He was not going to put up with it anymore. He was not. Light, who was he trying to fool? If they did not grab this bull of the winds and get out of Ebu Dar, Tylan would be pinching his bottom and calling him her little pigeon again tonight.
It's your ages, Rihanna. Elaine did not exactly sound hesitant. She never did that. But her tone became very careful. It is considered rude among Aes Sedai to speak of age, but... Rihanna, apparently no Aes Sedai since the Breaking has lived as long as any of you in the Knitting Circle claim.
That was the odd name these kin gave their ruling council.
In your own case, not by over 100 years.
The Red Belts gasped, going wide-eyed. A slender brown-eyed woman with pale honey hair gave a nervous giggle and instantly covered her mouth at Rihanna's whip-quick, "Famella!"
"That can't be possible," Rihanna said faintly to Elaine. "Surely Aes Sedai must..."
"Good morning," Matt said, stepping past the screen of plants. The whole discussion was idiotic. Everyone knew Aes Sedai lived longer than anybody else. Instead of wasting time, they should be on their way to the Rahad. "Where are Tom and Julin? And Nynaeve?" She had to have come back last night, or Elaine would have been in a swivet. "Blood and ashes, I don't see Brigida either. We need to be on our way, Elaine, not standing around. Is Avienda coming?" She frowned at him slightly, with just a flicker of her eyes toward Rihanna, and he knew she was deciding what performance to give him. Wide-eyed innocence might damage her standing with these women as much as flashing her dimple at him would. Elaine always expected that dimple to work where all else failed. Her chin rose slightly.
"Tom and Julin are helping Avienda and Brigitte watch Caradin's palace, Matt."
It was to be the daughter heir in near full bloom. Not the whole flowering, since she surely knew how he would react to that. But a voice full of certainty, cool blue eyes demanding, and that pretty face chill, if not exactly frozen with arrogance.
Was there any woman in the world who was just one person? "Nynaeve will be down shortly, I'm sure. There is no reason for you to come, you know, Matt. Nalisian and your soldiers are a more than adequate bodyguard. You could enjoy yourself right here in the palace until we return."
"Caradin!" he cried. "Elaine, we aren't staying in Ebu Dar to settle Jaqim Caradin."
"We are getting the bowl. Then you or Nynaeve is going to make a gateway, and we are leaving. Is that clear?
And I am going with you to the Rahad."
Enjoy himself.
The light only knew what Tylan would get up to if he remained in the palace all day. The very thought made him want to laugh hysterically. Icy stares stabbed at him from the wise woman. Stout Sumeko pursed her lips angrily, and Melora, a plump demoni in her middle years, whose bosom he had enjoyed eyeing yesterday, planted fists on hips with a face like a thunderhead. They should have known from yesterday that he was not intimidated by Aes Sedai, yet even Rihanna gave him such a scowl he half thought she might try to box his ears. Apparently, if they were going to fall all over themselves around Aes Sedai, then everybody else had to as well. Elaine struggled with herself visibly, her lips compressed, but one thing he had to give her. She was too smart to go on with what obviously would not work. On the other hand, she was snooty to the bone, however she tried. And the other women were watching.
"Matt, you know we cannot leave until we have used the bowl."
That haughty chin remained high, and her tone was at best halfway between explaining and telling.
"It might require days for us to be sure of how to use it, perhaps even half a week or more. And we might as well finish Caradin, if we can in that time."
Such a crackle entered her voice on the White Cloak's name that you might have thought she bore the man a personal grudge. But something else leaped out and clamped a fist on his thoughts.
"Half a week!"
Feeling strangled, he put a finger behind the scarf, knotted around his neck, and tugged to ease it. Tylin had used that length of black silk to tie his hands last night before he knew what she was doing.
Half a week? Or more?
Despite his best efforts, his voice became a touch frantic.
Elaine, surely you can use the bowl anywhere. It doesn't have to be here. Egwene must want you back as soon as possible. She can use a friend or two, I'll wager.
By the last he had seen, she could use a few hundred. Maybe once he got these women back, Egwene would be ready to give up that nonsense about being Amarlin, and let him take her to Rand along with Elaine and Nynaeve and Avienda.
And what about Rand, Elaine? Caemlyn? The Lion Throne? Blood and Ashes, you know you want to reach Caemlyn quick as you can so Rand can give you the Lion Throne.
For some reason, her face grew darker almost by the word, and her eyes flashed. He would have said she was indignant, except, of course, that she had no cause. She opened her mouth angrily to argue as soon as he finished, and he set himself, ready to list her promises into the pit of doom with what that did to her in the eyes of Rihanna and the rest. By their faces, they would have snubbed him short already in her place. Before anyone could say anything, though, a round, graying woman in House Mitsubar livery was curtsying, first to Elaine, then to the women wearing red belts, and finally to him.
"Queen Tylin sends this, Master Cawthon,"
Laren said, holding out a basket with a striped cloth over the contents and small red flowers woven around the handle.
"You did not breakfast, and you must maintain your strength."
Matt's cheeks warmed. The woman merely looked at him, but she had seen considerably more of him than when she first showed him into Tylin's presence. Considerably more. She had brought supper on a tray last night, while he tried to hide under the silk bedsheet. He did not understand it. These women had him jumping about and blushing like a girl. He just could not understand.
"Are you sure you wouldn't rather remain here?" Elaine asked. "I'm sure Tylin would enjoy your company for breakfast. The Queen said she finds you wonderfully entertaining and courteously compliant," she added in a doubtful tone.
Matt fled for the coaches with the basket in one hand and his Ashandarai in the other.
"Are all northern men so shy?"
Laren said. He risked a glance over his shoulder without stopping and heaved a sigh of relief. The serving woman was already gathering her skirts, turning to walk through the screen of plants, and Elaine was motioning Rihanna and the wise women into a circle close around her. Even so, he shivered. Women were going to be the death of him yet. Rounding the nearest coach, he nearly dropped the basket at the side of Beslan, seated on the coach step, sunlight gleaming along the narrow blade of his sword as he examined the edge.
"What are you doing here?" Matt exclaimed.
Beslan slid the sword into its sheath, a grin splitting his face.
"Coming with you to the Rahad. I suspect you'll find more fun for us."
"There had better be some fun," Nalisian yawned into his hand.
"I didn't get very much sleep last night, and now you drag me off when there are sea folk women about."
Vannin sat up on his barrel, looked around, found nothing moving, and settled himself back again with his eyes shut.
"There'll be no fun if I can help it," Matt muttered.
Nalisian had not gotten much sleep?
Ha! The whole lot of them had been out enjoying themselves at the festival. Not that he had not enjoyed himself in patches, but only when he could forget he was with a woman who thought he was some sort of bloody doll.
"What sea folk women?"
"When Nynaeve Sedai returned last night, she brought a dozen or more, Matt."
Beslan blew out his breath, and his hands made swaying motions.
"The way they move, Matt."
Matt shook his head. He was not thinking clearly. Tylin was scrambling his brains. Nynaeve and Elaine had told him about the Windfinders, reluctantly and in sworn secrecy, after trying to hold back even where Nynaeve wanted to go, much less why. And not a single blush at the effort, either. Women keep promises in their own way, so the saying went. Come to think of it, Lawton and Belvin were not with the rest of the Red Arms. Maybe Nynaeve thought to make up for the other by keeping them with her now.
In their own way.
But if she had the Windfinders already in the palace, surely it would not take half a week to use the bowl.
Light, please not.
As if thinking of her had been a summons, Nynaeve came strolling through the screen of plants into the stable yard. Matt's jaw dropped. The tall man in a dark green coat on her arm was Lan. Or rather, she was on his, clinging to it with both hands, smiling up at him. With any other woman, Matt would have said she was moon-eyed and dreaming. But this was Nynaeve. She gave a start once she realized where she was, and took a hasty step to one side, though she still held on to Lan's hand for a moment. Her choice of dresses was no better than Elaine's. All blue silk and green embroidery, cut low enough to show a heavy gold ring that would have rattled on her two thumbs together, dangling into her cleavage on a thin gold chain. The wide hat she carried by its ribbons was trimmed with blue plumes, her dust cloak green linen embroidered in blue. She and Elaine made the other women drab by comparison in their woolens. In any case, whether or not she had been calf eyes a moment before, she was all herself now, shifting her braid around.
"Join the other men now, Lan," she said peremptorily, "and we can go. The last four coaches are for the men."
"As you say," Lan replied, bowing with a hand on his sword hilt.
She watched him stride toward Matt with an expression of wonder, probably unable to believe he was obeying so meekly, then gave herself a shake and recovered her bristly self again. Gathering up Elaine and the other women, she herded them toward the first two coaches like a woman shooing geese. By the way she shouted for someone to open the stableyard gates, no one would have known she had been the one delaying their departure. She shouted at the drivers, too, setting them to snatching up their reins and flourishing their long whips. It was a marvel they waited for anyone to climb aboard. Scrambling awkwardly after Lan and Elysian and Beslin into the third coach, Matt propped his spear across the door and sat down hard with the basket on his lap as the coach lurched forward.
"Where did you come from, Lan?" he burst out as soon as introductions were out of the way. "You're the last man I expected to see. Where have you been? Light, I thought you were dead. I know Rand's afraid you are. And letting Nynaeve order you around? Why in the light would you do that?"
The stone-faced warder seemed to consider which question to answer.
"Nynaeve and I were married last night by the mistress of the ships," he said finally. "The Arthur on Mier have several unusual marriage customs. There were surprises for both of us."
A small smile touched his mouth, if nothing else. He shrugged slightly. Seemingly, that was all the answer he intended to give.
"The blessing of the light be upon you and your bride," Beslin murmured politely, with as much of a bow as the confines of the coach would allow,
and Elysian mumbled something, though it was plain from his expression that he thought Lan must be mad. Elysian had had a good bit of Nynaeve's company. Matt just sat there, swaying with the coach's motion and staring.
Nynaeve? Married? Lan? Married to Nynaeve? The man was mad. No wonder his eyes looked so bleak. Matt would as soon have stuffed a rabid fox down his own shirt. Only a fool married, and only a madman would marry Nynaeve.
If Lan noticed that not everyone was overjoyed, he gave no sign. Except for his eyes, he looked no different than Matt remembered. Maybe a little harder, if that was possible.
"There is something more important," Lan said. "Nynaeve doesn't want you to know, Matt, but you need to hear it. Your two men are dead, killed by Mogedion. I'm sorry, but if it is any consolation, they truly were dead before they knew. Nynaeve thinks Mogedion must be gone, or she'd have tried again, but I am not so certain. It seems she has a personal enmity toward Nynaeve, although Nynaeve managed to avoid telling me why." Again the smile. Lan seemed unaware of it.
"Not all of it, at least. And it does not matter. Best you know what might be facing us beyond the river, though."
"Mogedion," Beslin breathed, eyes shining. The man was probably seeing fun.
"Mogedion," Nalesian breathed, but in his case it was more of a groan, and he gave his pointed beard a fitful jerk.
"Those bloody flaming women," Matt muttered.
"I hope you don't include my wife," Lan said coldly, one hand gripping the hilt of his sword, and Matt quickly raised his own hands.
"Of course not.
Just Elaine and the kin.
After a moment, Lan nodded, and Matt breathed a small sigh of relief. It would be just like Nynaeve to get him killed by her husband.
Her husband?
When sure as bread was brown, she would have hidden the fact that one of the Forsaken might be in the city. Even Mogedion did not really frighten him, not so long as he had the fox head around his neck. But the medallion could not protect Nalysian or any of the rest. No doubt Nynaeve thought she and Elaine would do that. They let him bring along the red arms, all the while laughing up their sleeves at him while they...
Aren't you going to read my mother's note, Matt?
Until Beslan mentioned it, he had not realized there was a sheet of paper, folded small, tucked in between the basket and the striped cloth. Just enough showed to reveal the green seal, impressed with the anchor and sword. He broke the wax with his thumb and unfolded the page, holding it so Beslan could not see what was written. As well he did. Or then again, considering how the other man saw things, maybe it did not matter. Either way, Matt was just as glad no eyes but his saw those words. His heart sank deeper by the line.
"Matt, my sweet, I'm having your things moved to my apartments. So much more convenient. By the time you return, Rosella will be in your old rooms to look after young Oliver. He seems to enjoy her company. I have seamstresses coming to measure you. I will enjoy watching that. You must wear shorter coats, and new breeches, of course. You have a delightful bottom. Duckling, who is this daughter of the Nine Moons I made you think of? I have thought of several delicious ways to make you tell me. Tylan."
The others were all looking at him expectantly. Well, Lan was simply looking, but his gaze was more unnerving than the rest. That stare seemed almost dead.
"The queen thinks I need new clothes," Matt said, stuffing the note into his coat pocket. "I think I'll take a nap."
He pulled the brim of his hat down over his eyes, but he did not close them, staring out the window, where the tied-back curtain let in occasional eddies of dust. It also let in the wind, though, which was considerably better than the heat of a closed coach.
Mogedion and Tylan.
Of the two, he would rather confront Mogedion. He touched the fox head hanging in the open neck of his shirt. At least he had some protection against Mogedion. Against Tylan, he had no more than he did against the daughter of the Bloody Nine Moons, whoever she was. Unless he could find some way to make Nynaeve and Elaine leave Ebudar before tonight, everybody was going to know. Sullenly, he tugged his hat lower. These flaming women really were making him act like a girl. In another minute, he was afraid, he might just start crying.